All right, everybody, now it's time to get settled again. Everybody get settled and ready for the meeting. John's going to go now until 9 o'clock, so give a warm welcome for John.
All right, all right, all right. My name's John Eimer. I'm a recovered alcoholic. And I just want to thank you guys so much for being here tonight and getting us boys from Texas up to over to Charlotte, North Carolina. You guys have been so welcoming. I want to thank Mitchell specifically for hosting us, picking us up from the airport, kind of coordinating all our travel. He's a stand-up comedy guy. He's just getting into that. We got to hear all about it on the ride in from the airport. And I don't know, I mean, I'm barely hanging on just standing in front of you guys tonight. I don't know how you do something like that. That takes cojones for sure. But yeah, you know, Jared did a wonderful job breaking out the first step, you know, really outlining the illness that we suffer from, that first step spells out for us. You know, for me, I spent a lot of time, a lot of years in treatment, in AA, going to meetings, working with sponsors at times, in shelters and jails, and I never understood that first step. I never understood what it really meant to be an alcoholic. And I would walk around, and there were, you know, years where I would stay sober for multiple years, but I didn't understand what it meant. You know, I was referring to myself as an alcoholic. I was showing up to meetings, but I never understood it. And it was really that choice component. You know, it was that lack of you know, the ability to choose when we could drink or not. I thought that I had a choice. Every time I got sober, I came back from a relapse, you know, whatever the circumstances were, I thought it was always caused by something. And I always thought in the back of my mind, I had a choice. You know, I thought I've just hit a bottom. It's really tough. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm making up my mind. I'm not going back to drinking, you know, and then I would seek out my solution by going to treatment or going to AA meetings. But in the back of my mind, I thought I could make a choice and just choose to live sober day to day, you know, and unfortunately, it never worked. You know, I like Jared explained, I would get some relief in going to treatment. I would get some relief in going to meetings. I would get some relief in getting healthy. I would get some relief in developing new relationships and moving to new cities and getting new jobs. I tried everything, going to church. I tried everything. And I just never understood that fundamental and therefore never had that desperation that he talked about and went through with the rest of this program as it's outlined in this book. And until I did that, I was never free from it. You know, the last, you know, bottom that I experienced before I was finally introduced to this foundation that Jared introduced, and I'm gonna dive into a little bit further, I, like Jared, was convinced that nothing could help me, you know? I had finally gotten to that place where I realized that I had no choice and I was truly hopeless, but I didn't think AA would work. I didn't think treatment would work. I tried all those things and I was convinced none of it works. You know, I'm just a hopeless guy that is just gonna keep doing this. It's just gonna keep getting worse and worse and worse. And my decision, the morning I woke up after once again, you know, telling myself I'm gonna stay away from it this weekend, I'm trying some new medications and I'm gonna get my life back in order. You know, once again, just burning it down all weekend, coming to Monday morning, not knowing where my vehicle is, having to call out of work. My decision was, I'm gonna take a couple bottles of pills, I'm gonna finish off this bottle of whiskey and I'm not gonna wake up. That was my plan. And I was convinced that was my only option. And thankfully, someone had intervened, someone that had been with me the night before over the weekend, and they were concerned just by some of the things I was saying, you know, just what was going on in my life and just talking about various things. They showed up, and they're not an alcoholic, they're not an AA. But thankfully they showed up and they took me to a hospital for detox and, you know, some psychiatric evaluation. And I was blessed with another moment of clarity while in that detox, you know, because the first step really kind of points out also how delusional we can be, you know, how we aren't able to really see what's going on. And we have these insane thoughts like, I can make a choice whether I'm going to drink or not. And I was holding on to that delusion even after, you know, getting taken to this hospital. And, you know, as I was leaving the hospital, you know, after lying to all the doctors, you know, the book talks about that, you know, I'm that guy. I lie to the people that I'm paying to help me. And, you know, I lied the whole way through. I told them I didn't really have a history of drinking. It was a bad mix of alcohol and medication. And I was just in, you know, some depression. I'll be okay. I just wanted to get out of there. That ego was already starting to rebuild itself. And, you know, this nurse pulled me aside and she was like, you know, are you sure you don't think you have a problem with drinking? And I was like, yeah, no, I think it was, again, just a bad mix. I'm okay. I'm on my way out. She was like, okay. Well, if you ever do feel like you have a problem with drinking, you should check out Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, in the back of my mind, I'm going, yeah, I've been there, done that. That didn't work. And she, you know, doubled down and was like, where do you live? And I, you know, I told her in Addison and in Dallas. And she, you know, knew of a group there. And I assumed she was in AA. And I really hope I get to meet her one day. Because I came back to my room and I, you know, I just got all my stuff back. I got my shoelaces back so I could tie my shoes. I sat on the bed and I started tying my shoes and it just hit me like a ton of bricks, you know, this moment of clarity around the fact that, you know, I'd been exposed to AA and I'd done the 1-2-3, 1-2-3-4 a few times, but I hadn't really gone all the way through, you know. And even in doing that work, I always just, you know, the ego would come back and I would tell myself I didn't need to do this. I had other things going on and I would push myself away from it. And I had never really gone all the way through. Even though I'd read the book, I'd had sponsors, I had never really done the work. I never really internalized the fact that I'm an alcoholic. I am hopeless. You know, it was finally that moment, that moment where I could say, I need help. I need a way out, you know? And that's exactly what this book provides. So, you know, as we come out of step one, you know, as I came out of that first step experience and finally, you know, conceding to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic, now what do I do? You know, where do we go from here? And, you know, that brings up step two. We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. You know, the main thing that I immediately identified with that was restore to sanity. Like I could see where I was insane, you know, just in the first step really spells out insanity. You know, if you really think about that, that was my life, specifically around drinking. You know, I tried everything. I tried every way imaginable to stop drinking. And I thought that, you know, I convinced myself, even, you know, as it says on page 24, how we conveniently forget, like I would convince myself that I could drink again after staying sober for a couple years and going to all the places that I went to. You know, the last big relapse that I had, you know, I had some where it was like, okay, you know, I was going through a breakup or I lost a job or something was going on like that. But the last relapse I had actually gotten everything back. I was doing extremely well. I just moved out of sober living. I just got in my own place. Life was perfect. You know, I got my credit back. I financed a vehicle. I'd done, coming from a shelter, I'd done a lot, you know, and life was going perfectly. I was on a business trip with some coworkers. They were drinking and I ordered a beer just like that. I didn't think about it, you know? It's like Fred's story, not a cloud on the horizon. It was a beautiful, perfect day up in Boston, Massachusetts. I was at a bar, it was you know, fun. I was having a good time, and I ordered a beer, and that started another 3-year run, you know, just like that. And it was finally coming to see that insanity and going to a meeting that, you know, really explained, like Jared did, what it is we suffer from, or like light bulbs started to go off. And I was like, okay, this makes sense. You know, this is me. I am that alcoholic. So now what? So, you know, as we get into step two, we find step two, you know, very beautifully outlined in the chapter We Agnostics. And so that starts on page 44. And I'm gonna pick up where Jared started, about halfway through the first paragraph. If when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Okay, so coming into this, I was very, very agnostic, if not just full-blown atheist. You know, even after all of this, everything that had happened, I still was on the fence when it came to talking about God or a higher power. I couldn't understand it, and therefore chose not to believe that way. I had also, like I shared, gone to church and had tried to stay sober as a result of going to church, and failed, and really developed some resentments against the church I was going to, just based on some of the ways they did things and some of their viewpoints. So therefore, I just wrote off any kind of idea of God. So I was totally agnostic coming into this. And, you know, I thought that meant I'm hopeless, you know, but the good news is we have this chapter that really dispels a lot of the things that agnostics and atheists tend to, you know, struggle with. And I'll say also, you know, if coming into this, or, you know, if you're working with people in the future that are coming into this program and are religious, that's great. That is awesome. You know, they can take that belief and utilize it within this framework beautifully. You know, it's, if anything, it's going to enhance that relationship that they have, because that's what it's designed to do. But, you know, for those of us who are agnostic, you know, there's a lot of good stuff in this chapter. You know, my first question was, what is a spiritual experience? You know, what does that mean? How does that happen? You know, and if we fast forward to the 12th step, you know, it says, as a result of having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, you know? So by going through this process, I'm gonna have this spiritual awakening. But what is it? You know, what am I looking for? What happens? And they, you know, they mention it all throughout the book, but I think a really cool place that they discuss it is when Roland Hazard goes to see Dr. Carl Jung. And that happens in There's a Solution on page 26. So the top of 26, it reads, a certain American businessman had ability, good sense, and high character. For years, he had floundered from one sanitarium to another. He had consulted the best-known American psychiatrists. Then he had gone to Europe, placing himself in the care of celebrated physician, the psychiatrist Dr. Jung, who prescribed for him. So Roland Hazard came from a very wealthy family. You know, you could compare the family to the Walton family today. You know, they own Walmart. Very, you know, billions comparable to back then. And so they had every means at their disposal as far as getting this, their son, treatment. He could go anywhere, do anything. So they looked at basically the two forefathers of psychiatry back then, Sigmund Freud and Carl Jung. Sigmund Freud was too busy, thankfully. So they sent him to Dr. Carl Jung. And Dr. Carl Jung was located in Switzerland at the time. He's in New York. So he got on a ship, he sailed across the ocean, hopped on a train, went to Switzerland. He spent a year in treatment directly under Dr. Carl Jung. I believe he was seeing him about once a week, if not more. And after that year, Dr. Young said, okay, we've done everything. I'm going to send you on your way, head back to the U.S., and hopefully everything works out. And so he stayed sober for that year while in treatment. After getting on the train, within 24 hours, he ordered a drink, and he kept drinking until he was unconscious and ended up in Spain somehow instead of going up to England. And he got back on the train and went back to Dr. Carl Jung. And that continues on page 27, the very top. It says, the doctor said, you have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. I've never seen one single case recover where that state of mind existed to the extent that it does in you. Our friend felt as though the gates of hell had closed on him with a clang. He said to the doctor, is there no exception? Yes, replied the doctor, there is. Exceptions to cases such as yours have been occurring since early times. Here and there, once in a while, alcoholics have had what are called vital spiritual experiences. To me, these occurrences are phenomena. They appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding forces of the lives of these men, are suddenly cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them. You know, ideas, feelings, attitudes, basically how I operate. And they're describing, you know, internal things, right? They're you know, focus on feelings. That's how I feel. That is something internal. And what do we suffer from? An illness that is internal, like Jared explained. You know, nothing from the outside is gonna fix me. I have to become fixed from the inside. The things that are driving me day to day is what has to change for me to recover, you know? So that spiritual awakening or spiritual experience, whatever you wanna call it, is what's gonna allow me to recover from this, okay? And if, you know, if we fast forward to the end of the book, you know, they have a whole appendix for, you know, a spiritual experience. And there's a couple good pieces that I wanna touch on. It's on page 567 if you're in a fourth edition. But if we scroll down to the last paragraph about halfway through, it says, most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. If we move over to the second page, it says, most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members called it God consciousness. So, you know, basically, this is explaining that, you know, how I think, how I feel is going to change as a result of this spiritual awakening. So that's what I'm aiming for. And again, it's nothing on, you know, on the outside. So, you know, that brings us back to We Agnostics. And, you know, at this point, even after seeing this and having it explained the way I just explained, you know, I was still on the fence. I still didn't know what to believe in. You know, I couldn't get on board with organized religion. And thankfully, I was told I didn't have to. You know? If we go over to page 45, they explain in the first fresh paragraph, lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem, you know? So it's answering another question. How do I have this spiritual experience? That's exactly what this book is about, you know? It's as simple as that. It's gonna give me clear-cut directions on how to find this power. That's the whole point of the 12 steps, is getting in touch with this power, having that spiritual awakening and recovering, and then continuing to mine that power by continuing to live these principles and work this program. And it just becomes a never-ending thing. It just becomes a design for living. So, you know, even with that statement, I was still kind of skeptical, you know? And I had the desperation coming out of that first step. You know, I could get on board with what Jared was saying when he talked about, you know, this inability to stop, feeling hopeless, just everything I experienced. Again, I was convinced of that, you know, and that's really the only thing that kept me engaged. But I still just struggled with this idea of how, what do I believe in, you know? But if we break down the specifics of the short form of the steps, came to believe. It's as simple as that. All we're doing is finding a little bit of willingness to believe that maybe there's something else out there. You know, we don't have to believe. In that moment, I don't have to believe that there is a higher power out there. I don't have to know what that higher power is. Again, if I do, great. But if I don't, that's okay too. That's the beauty, and ultimately, I think, why Bill added these steps into the six tenets of the Oxford group. You know, it opens the door to everyone, regardless of how we feel or what we believe in. You know, it then goes on to spend, you know, a decent amount of time over the pages, and I'll highlight a couple places that I found valuable. Towards the bottom of 45, in the last paragraph, says, some of us have been violently anti-religious. That's me. To others, the word God brought up a particular idea of him with which someone had tried to impress them during their childhood. Perhaps we rejected this particular conception because it seemed inadequate. With that rejection, we imagined we had abandoned the God idea entirely. We were bothered with the thought that faith and dependence upon a power beyond ourselves was somewhat weak, even cowardly. That was one of the feelings I had, you know? It basically goes on to explain prejudice. I just had prejudice against this idea of believing in something I couldn't see and touch, you know? And that's an understandable way to think and feel, but at the end of the day, with that desperation coming out of one, it should be okay, and it should be, you know, you should be able to get to a place where you're willing to say, maybe there's something out there. You know, and it goes on again on page 46, further down in the first real paragraph. We found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results. Even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power, which is God. You know, so again, it's reassuring me that just with this millimeter, this ounce of willingness, I can build on that. That's all I need this early on in the process. That's all I need to start going through with the rest of the work. I also like that it ends with, to us, the realm of the spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding. You know, it again opens the door to everyone, regardless of what you believe in, how you believe, how you were raised, where you live, the color of your skin, all that stuff. So all we do when we, you know, get through this with your, you know, yourself or a sponsor you're working with is ask this question on page 42 when it comes to the second step. Do I now believe? It's halfway down page 47. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe, or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. you know? So there it is in black and white. All I have to be is just a little bit willing to believe, you know? And Jared's my sponsor. Jared asked me that, you know, we got to this part in the book and I was still like, I guess, you know, I'm not sure, you know? But he asked me to consider something else. He said, are you willing to believe that there's something working in my life? That I've found something that I've, that has allowed me to recover from what I suffered from, alcoholism. And I was willing to believe that, you know, because I heard his story. You know, I heard about what happened and what he was like, you know, and I identified that specifically and most importantly, I identified with how he felt throughout all that, you know, and at the end of the day, how hopeless he felt prior to finding this solution, you know, and I believed that. And then on the flip side, I saw him for the man he is today and at that time when I was getting sober. I saw him happy, content, trying to be helpful to me, trying to be helpful to others in our group, putting his contact info, smiling, laughing, you know? And that's what I wanted. You know, going from feeling like I want to die, feeling so depressed I want to end my life, I just wanted to feel something and really just feel content again. You know, I wanted that. I wanted to feel useful again. I wanted to experience the promises that we find in the ninth step and all throughout this book. I wanted to feel that, you know? I wanted to experience this psychic change that is spelled out like we just discussed. So with all of that said, I was on board and I was a little bit willing. I still had no idea who or what God was or this higher power. I had no idea what to call it, but I was willing to believe, okay? And Jared was like, great, let's go to step three. Right away. And I was like, all right, we're moving fast. And so, you know, step three reads, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. And me, I'm like, well, great. You know, I don't even know what God or who God is. How am I going to turn my will and my life over to the care of something I don't even understand, you know? But when we, again, break down the step, we're going to focus on a couple pieces. You know, most importantly, made a decision. You know, that's all we're really doing. We're going to make a decision. And the way we turn our will and our life over to the care of God is by going through the rest of the steps, going through the rest of the process. That's how we turn our will and our lives over to the care of God and ultimately find God or enhance our connection with God or our higher power. That's exactly what they're designed to do, as our book tells us in multiple places. So you might ask yourself, and you might have people you work with ask you, like, well, why do I need to do that? You know, and the book does a really good job of starting to focus on our main problem as we're going through the book and going, you know, following this process, the clear-cut directions. It's going to start challenging how we live and how we feel, how we operate. And so on page 60, after the ABCs, it says, being convinced we were at step three, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. His arrangement, if his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everyone, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. Did anyone else identify with that? I mean, it's crazy. Like, you know, in all the time I spent in AA, like, you know, I'm sure I read this and I'm sure I heard it in meetings, but just it never connected. And it connected with me so much this last time. You know, I tried to run my life. I executed self-will in so many areas of my life. And most of the time, like, things would work out, you know? And I was absolutely convinced, again, that I could use self-will to stay sober. But time and time again, I failed. And when I honestly looked at it, when I honestly looked at my life, especially when I was in the four-step, I saw that that is not how life was supposed to go, you know? And I had a lot of problems. Me, the way I think, the way I feel, was only leading to more and more of that just discontent, irritability, depression, anxiety. All of that was coming from within. It had nothing to do that, you know, with what was going on the outside. And so, you know, I could identify with that mentality, you know? And even when trying to get sober, you know, if I thought several times, if I only could arrange everything perfectly, you know, if I got out of treatment and I could get a vehicle and get the right job, like, I could stay sober, like, life would be okay, you know? And I failed every time. You know, you can apply it to so many different areas of your life. But then they hit us with the sad fact in the second paragraph on page 61. What usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he is sure that other people are more to blame. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. Me again, you know? I thought that was what was causing me to drink, causing me to relapse over and over and over again. I thought that it was the girlfriend, the family, the job firing me. I thought that is what was driving me to drink, driving me to feel the way that I felt. It goes on to say, what is his basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind? Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are things he wants? And do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? He is not, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony. You know, the self-seeking part is also something that I had to take a close look at, you know, because even when I was trying to be nice and trying to make things happen, I was always self-seeking. You know, I always had a reason for treating someone the way I treated them, whether it was bad or good, you know, but specifically, you know, when treating someone kindly or trying to do things for others, it always had a selfish motive attached to it. You know, and when that person didn't respond or, you know, that situation didn't play out the way I wanted it to, I got upset and I reacted, you know? So therefore, it was really rooted in self. It goes on to say, our actor is self-centered, egocentric, as people like to call it nowadays. He is like the retired businessman who lolls in the Florida sunshine in the winter, complaining of the sad state of the nation. The minister who sighs over the sins of the 20th century, politicians and reformers who are sure all would be utopia if the rest of the world would only behave, the outlaw safecracker who thinks society has wronged him, and the alcoholic who has lost all and is locked up. Whatever our protestations, are not most of us concerned with ourselves, our resentment, or our self-pity? Truthfully, yes, yes, and yes, you know? And, you know, this does a beautiful job of getting us to focus on the fact that our self-will, how we live, how we operate, you know, when it goes on to say selfishness, self-centeredness, me living that way is what ultimately fuels this disconnect with the rest of the world and God, this higher power. You know, it goes on to say that we think is the root of our troubles. driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. So that's something, you know, that in this moment, in, you know, this decision to go through with the rest of the steps, and can be hard to see, but that's cool because we're going to do that in the fourth step. But, you know, it should help me better understand what it is that I suffer from as I'm making this decision. It should make it easier for me to make this decision. You know, when it's so eloquently put to me in that way, I can start to see it. I don't fully understand it yet, but I can start to see it. And I can start to sign off on this idea that my life, me running the show, isn't working. Maybe it's time for something else. You know, it can open my heart just a little bit more to this idea that a higher power can help me out. You know, and that's, again, all we're doing in this third step. And, you know, it goes on to say at the end of that third step sentence, it says, as we understood him. So it, again, just reaffirms that I don't have to understand who or what God is, you know? If I do, great. But if I don't, that's where I'm at. That's how I understand it at the moment. And that's okay. You know, we don't have to have an idea at this point. So, you know, when I've made that decision, it's going to start to set this idea up that, you know, we're going to start to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. And so at the bottom of page 62, it said, in the last paragraph, it says, this is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father, and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple. And this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer, being all powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Jared told me to underline that last sentence. And at that time, I didn't understand what that meant, because again, just where I was spiritually, I wasn't there yet. But it is so true. It is so, so true. It comes true in my life every day. You know, when I'm struggling, when I am lacking in faith around things going on in my life, I can always go back to this and remind myself that as long as I stay close to him, again, through the steps, prayer, meditation, regular inventory, working with others, and perform his work well, primarily working with others, he will provide everything I need. And that has been so true ever since I've gone through this process. You know, just a quick story. Over this past year, I've faced some stuff going on in my professional life. I've been laid off twice in a year, you know, not performance or behavior based for once, thankfully, you know. I showed up, I did the work. You know, it was just financial reasons and a bad partnership. And, you know, nonetheless, it's been challenging, you know, it's been challenging to get through life without stable income. And I've had many a 10 steps with Jared, and, you know, we can always go back to this, and he always drives me back to this. Where is God in this? You know, what are you doing? What are you spending that free time you have now that you're unemployed, that you have nothing else going on with work? And when I am, and we'll get more into this, you know, in those specific action steps, but when I am on point, when I am executing this program as it's written, I'm okay, you know? and I find the money I need to survive. You know, everything works out. You know, interviews happen. New job, I got another job, and unfortunately it didn't work out. But things like that perfectly happen. I've been able to I haven't missed a bill. I haven't been late on a payment. I've maintained my personal relationship with my fiance. Everything has been okay. And all I've done is continue to practice what this book tells us to do. And it's worked. So that became true. Yet another thing that became true and continues to prove true in this new life that I have. So going from, I don't know if that's going to happen, to it definitely happens. You know, it's happening today, is pretty remarkable. So going back to the mechanics of three, you know, once we've come to understand this, even though we might not fully understand it, it's going to direct us to take, you know, to say this prayer. And it, you know, it's really a beautiful prayer. You know, as someone who, you know, was agnostic, I didn't know about prayer. You know, I knew what it was, but I didn't know what to pray to. So I just, you know, I just put this barrier up around it. And it's there's a simple solution to that. There are prayers all throughout this book. You know, there's prayers all throughout it. You know, so in the 11th step, when it talks about seeking God through prayer and meditation, we have a lot of prayers to start with and build on, you know, as we develop that relationship. And it really starts with this one. I'm going to read it. We were now at step three. Many of us said to our Maker as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Such a beautiful prayer. And when I, you know, when I said it, I felt kind of funny. You know, I felt a little awkward in saying, you know, I'm on my knees, I'm with my sponsor, I'm saying this prayer. But if we go up to the preceding paragraph, about halfway through, it says, as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. You know, that's referred to as the third step promise. And that's something that we can look at and is another reference to this spiritual connection that we are beginning in the third step by saying this prayer. You know, and maybe you don't feel it. Maybe it's not profound. For some, I've heard it is. You know, for me, it wasn't like profound, but I started to open my mind and more importantly, my heart to this idea. I could start to sense something, you know, and I could, when I honestly asked myself, start to sense something. I didn't know what it was, but I started to feel just a little bit free. You know, I started to feel a little just warm, right, after saying this prayer. And that is, you know, as Dr. Young put it, you know, ideas, emotions, you know, that's that emotional connection that we are developing by going through this process, you know, starting with this prayer. So after saying this prayer, me personally, I think, okay, I'm good, you know. I'm feeling good. I'm starting to feel a little bit better. I'm going to keep going to these meetings and studying the book. And, you know, we'll maybe get to the next step in a week or two. Jared was like, oh, no. No, no, no. Let's keep reading. So at the bottom of page 63, it says, next we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. The two words right now, we're going to get more into four tomorrow, but the two words that we want to focus on in this moment are launched and at once. And we want to remind ourselves of the timeline that Jared mentioned, you know, the week to a month, that mental obsession being able to return. at the worst possible time usually. And that we have to get through this process. You know, we've made a decision. We've, you know, the book refers to it as made a beginning. It mentions that in a couple of stories. All we've done at this point is we've made a beginning. We've made a decision. We've said a prayer, but we still haven't recovered. We have to get into the bulk of the work, which, you know, really is going to happen in 4 through 9 immediately, to get connected to this higher power. We have to do it. It's the only way we can get through this. And we have to do it quickly, you know? If you want to go with a week to a month, that's great. You know, the book doesn't, you know, specifically give us a, you know, a firm schedule, you know, and outline and how we should take someone through the work. But I can tell you this. Those earlier attempts at getting sober, when I did, you know, although I was struggling with this basic idea of powerlessness, you know, I did have a few sponsors and we did go through the process. And for me, going through very slowly, I always just twist it off. You know, it always became less and less important. I, you know, would just think of anything else I had to do, procrastinate, and then eventually I would just, you know, probably have to find another sponsor. You know, I didn't stay engaged. And I think, you know, that's where, and from what I've experienced with working with others now, that's where I see a lot of people fall short, not having that desperation to go through with this process quickly. You know, Jared gave me a week to do it. I did it in a week. You know, I was motivated and I was capable of doing it in a week. I didn't have to spend months on it. But, you know, I will say, at the end of the day, you know, as long as we're honest and thorough, and if we attack it with that desperation, we should be able to do it pretty quickly. You know, it shouldn't take us months and months and months to do this, you know, inventory and get into this work. It's a very quick process. Some things are going to take more time, but, you know, continuing this feeling, building on this, you know, spiritual beginning that I'm experiencing in this third step needs to continue, you know, to hold on to it. I've got to continue working it. And, you know, it gives us the specific language that proves that. In closing, just to kind of finish out my story, you know, and it, like Jared said, we're going to kind of interweave our story as we go through the steps. You know, as I quickly got into that inventory and wrote that inventory in a week and then shared that inventory with him in the fifth step, I started to sense this power more and more. You know, it started to become something that I could feel, you know, how I operated, how I thought, my selfishness, my resentments, those things did start to dissipate. They didn't just immediately go away, but they started to dissipate and I started to feel something new, you know? So this spiritual awakening that has been described started to come true, you know? And that allowed me to invest more. And it was like, okay, what are we doing next? You know? And it was on to, it was going through 6 and 7 and understanding that, and then quickly into 8 and writing out that list. You know, and then quickly getting into 9 and going out and making amends the next day, you know? And as I made those amends, you know, it really just boils down to action. The more action I took in this work, the more connected I felt to God. And I was able to find this higher power that is promised to us as a result of this, you know? And that has come true just like everything else. You know, the more and more I've practiced this, the more and more connected I feel, you know? And when I don't practice this, when I let up, when I get complacent, I start to lose that connection. And that just, thankfully, staying close to a, you know, a solution-based group, I'm able to get back on track and, you know, it reminds me of certain things and I can get back into my practice of 10 and 11 specifically and get plugged back in. And that reminds me like, okay, like I don't wanna go back to that. You know, I don't want to go back to those feelings of discontent and put myself in that really scary place where I might drink or I might just skip that and I might just go back to suicide, you know. So at the end of the day, you know, the ultimate goal of this, and specifically in 2 and 3, is really just having a little bit of willingness to believe that maybe there's something out there. And with that, making a decision to try this process out, see what happens, you know? You hear some people say, like, what do you have to lose at that point? You might as well just try and see what happens. And it's as simple as that. So for the rest of the day tomorrow, we're gonna continue. We're gonna stay focused on the book. We're gonna stay focused on the text, and we're gonna just, you know, kind of talk through this process in more detail, share our experience around the specific steps we took, how we took them, and, you know, just provide as much helpful information as possible. Jared did want me to mention, if you guys have any questions, we are going to try and fit in a Q&A tomorrow. So if you have questions you want to ask, you know, the group in a, you know, a full group format that, you know, multiple people would benefit from the answer, please write those questions down and save them. If there's something that you want to speak to either of us individually about in your personal experience, something more personal, we're also happy to meet and hang out as long as we have to and talk with anyone individually. That's why we're here. So with that, thank you guys so much for your time tonight, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Hey guys, we got food. Everybody should take some food home and leave the tables and chairs where they are. And doors open at 8 tomorrow. Do you know Rachel? 8:30. And then the workshop's going to start at 9:30. And in between there, we'll have like some muffins and coffee and stuff. So I'll see you guys tomorrow. But let's